Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.
Welcome to Season 6, Episode 2 of the Center of Everywhere podcast. I'm Marnie Werner, and I'm the Vice President of Research at the Center for Rural Policy and Development. We are a private nonpartisan, nonprofit organization based in rural Minnesota, where we are dedicated to providing data-driven research on rural issues to help our policymakers make more informed decisions affecting the rural people and places of our state. So today we're going to be talking with Elise Harrington and Al Roeder. Elise is on the faculty at the Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs at the U of M, while Al is the city administrator for the city of Byron in southeast Minnesota. And today we are going to be talking about data centers. So that's a big topic these days. So Elise, Al, thanks so much for being on the show today. So let's just start with each of you and what you do and how you became involved in the whole subject of data centers and their development. Who wants to go first?
Go ahead, Elise.
Okay, I'll jump in. Well, Marnie, thank you so much for having us on the podcast today. It's a pleasure to be here talking with you about this. So I'll kind of say I got involved in the topic of data centers in two ways. One is if you're like me and you like to study and learn about energy issues, which is one of the things that I kind of live and breathe, it's inescapable to kind of focus some on data centers right now. They're really changing a lot of the landscape for the electricity sector in the US right now. So that's one thing, is just they're a glaring issue facing us. And then the other is because of people like Al. And so Al will talk to you more about it, but part of the work that I do is really try to understand how can we bring more voices into conversations about energy issues. And one of those voices is local governments. And so I was tasked with helping craft and lead a project that's trying to figure out what is the right information and how should we provide that information to local government leaders in southeast Minnesota to help them make the most informed decisions about data centers that they can.
Okay, great. And Al, how about you?
Well, in the city of Byron, we're close to Rochester. We're in a very rich technology valley, if you will, in this part of the state. But we see a lot of conversations about data centers. And I think one of the things that has really sparked my interest is watching the emotionally charged arguments for and against data centers happening all over southern Minnesota and other parts of the country, quite honestly. And I wanted to better understand it. Part of my role as city administrator is to give my city council really good information. They're going to make good decisions if I give them good information. And of course, we represent 7,000 constituents here in Byron. What are we doing for them? How are we educating them so that they understand why we're for or against, any topic? And I don't feel like we were really well equipped to start that conversation. So we sponsored a grant that brought us some brilliant people like Elise and others that are working on it. And there's actually three communities that are partnering on this. But the topic is not, are data centers good or bad? It is just, what are the facts? Because I think every community has to look at the facts as it pertains to their community. So really what I want to do is eliminate as much of the emotion as I can. Let's get down to what the facts are. Data centers have notoriously been huge water consumers. Well, we're seeing that landscape change very quickly. So now there's concern about the energy usage. And I think that's valid. Is it to the extreme? I mean, what is that level of energy utilization? And how does it affect everybody around the data center? Is it good or bad? Does it bring more power or more energy where there wasn't enough in the first place? I don't know. I can't answer that for every location. But as a community looks at it, and Byron in particular, that's a huge tax base potential. If I can offset my residential tax base with a commercial industrial tax base, that's good for citizens. We
Okay.
think.
Yeah, so that's what you're going to try and find out, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay. Well, so first of all, just so we're all on the same page, because we hear the term data center and people's antennas go up. How about first, just what is a data center? Who would like to tackle that?
I can tackle that, and then I'll feel free to add anything. I think this is a really important question, because I will say that over the conversations we've had over the past year, I think making sure that there is a common baseline of what is it that we're talking about is quite helpful. And so I tend to think about data centers in kind of two different buckets. The first bucket is actually something that many of us maybe are more familiar with, at least conceptually. And this is the kind of data center that has historically been what we have had in the country. And those are what we tend to call cloud data centers. They're often owned by kind of one company who is using that to store all of the things that we store on our cloud. If you think about it as like the actual physical infrastructure of all of those things that we store, our files, our movies, our pictures. In some cases, some incredibly important infrastructure that those systems provide for us. So those are kind of your cloud computing data centers. There's often regions of the country that are thought of as kind of the areas that have the highest concentration of data centers. So Northern Virginia is one of them, and it's operating much more in a kind of suburban context than a rural context for data centers. But that area is primarily this kind of cloud data center that we're talking about. Some of the data centers in particular that rural communities are seeing come and are sparking some of the kind of heated debates are what we call kind of hyperscale data centers. These are much larger campuses of data centers. So oftentimes people will define data center size based on the amount of electricity that it's using. These smaller data centers, the original ones, some of them are not even that small, but they could range anywhere from kind of 1 megawatt up to usually like 50 megawatts. And one of our collaborators on the project always likes to say, if you think about kind of 1 megawatt being about 1,000 households. So those, could typically range from kind of like 1,000 to 50,000. These hyperscale data centers are much, much larger. We're talking about, often 100 to 300 or more megawatts of power. So we're talking about adding, the amount of power that is whole cities to the grid when we're talking about those. And they are much larger in footprint and much larger in resource demand. Those are doing hyperscale data centers, are doing a number of things, but largely are associated with kind of the AI use and demands for data. So those are the two big buckets I tend to think about.
Okay, so the cloud and the hyperscale.
There's some ownership dimensions that people will think about. So there's some models that allow, a third-party developer to come in and develop a large data center, and then you can kind of rent out space in those. And sometimes it really does matter when you're thinking about it from the perspective of a local government, whether you are, contracting or negotiating with a third-party developer or the kind of company that will own and operate that space. But that's kind of like an additional layer that you could layer on top of those two.
Okay. Al, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I the only thing that I would probably interject is this isn't new. This has been around for I think longer than people give it credit for. In a previous life, I was researching data centers in, I don't know, 2008, 2009, and actually had an opportunity to to tour some data centers in the Midwest. One was more of your cloud-based, if you want to call it that. It's smaller. It's in downtown Chicago, in the heart of what I would have thought it to be a commercial district, business district. Another one was a hyperscale data center. But again, that was 15, 20 years ago. And here we are acting like it's this brand new revelation. And to me, I just find that astonishing that it's somehow crept up on us over, 15 or 20 years. But it's been there for quite some time.
Okay.
In both scales.
Sure. Okay. So why is this, maybe why is this seem to be cropping up now? And why is this such a complex issue for rural leaders and rural communities?
I'm not sure why now. I don't understand that piece of it still. Other than the demand for more of them, maybe it's just the scale is getting larger and faster, which could be part of it. One of the issues I think we have to be aware of in rural Minnesota is if I create a 400 acre data center, that's 400 acres of housing development I don't have. So there's a distinct trade-off, and we're looking at how do we create affordable housing. And in Minnesota, affordable housing is really a hot topic right now as well. It doesn't mean it's one or the other, but a lot of times, we forget that land is still a limited resource. So we have to be wise about how we use it. Again, it's not a right or wrong answer, but I think that is part of the contention, and we have to make sure that we are good stewards of whichever model or resource, how we use that resource.
Okay. Elise?
I feel like I can comment a little bit on the why now, which expands on Al's point about kind of the increased demand from these that we're seeing today. And I think that we're seeing that in a couple of different ways that are bringing data centers to kind of the forefront of people's discussions when they're thinking about these rural development projects, but also the electricity sector and the demand that it's putting on them. So one is where you have regions that have this history, you have regions of the country that have decades of data center development underpinning their development plans. But you're getting to a point where that amount of electricity demand is really aggregating to a scale that is affecting not just an individual place, but the way that we do kind of regional planning for our electricity system. And so you have questions now being raised about, well, what are the impacts of this aggregated demand over time on our infrastructure system? And so we're seeing that happen while we're also seeing the number of these individual large facilities, the number proposed, go up. And so I think because you're starting to see this in so many places that hadn't seen this development before in this way, it's attracting people's attention. It's attracting people's attention because it's something new and because of those demands that it does put on the resources that Al mentioned. And so you are having communities and the leaders of those communities have to really think carefully about, well, if we do this investment, what is that trade-off? What is that trade-off in land use? What are the ecological impacts going to be? What are the impacts going to be on our infrastructure systems, not only our electricity infrastructure system, but also things like our wastewater treatment, other areas that are very important to local government leaders.
Okay, and that leads nicely into the next question, which is, the big issue that we hear when we hear people talking about data centers is their impact or their potential impact on a community's water and energy infrastructure, especially if you think smaller communities, and therefore on what residents pay for those utilities. What are, you talked, Al, a little about taking, focusing on facts and taking the emotion out of it. What do either of you know about, how they really affect a community's water and electrical infrastructure, and what are the concerns, what should people be concerned about or not be concerned about?
Oh gosh, I won't speak for Elise because this is really set down her area of expertise, but every community is going to look at it differently. I don't think we can do a one size fits all. We don't have a model that will only work in communities up to 5,000 or, over 5,000. So I think the community has to make a decision on how is their water affected. We're seeing these closed loop systems coming into play, and the water utilization after the initial startup is very nominal. So wastewater and water both are really not that affected, but your energy is. And if you're in Byron, we have two different providers. We've got a co-op that serves part of the community. We've got XL Energy serving part of the community. What is their capacity to meet that demand? And that's almost out of the realm of us making a decision. They're here to sell energy. And so we're a little bit at their mercy from that standpoint because that's their industry. But what is the aesthetics for our community? What is the tax base? Where do we locate it so that we're not negatively impacting residential neighborhoods? Because in Byron, we're a bedroom community to Rochester. My residential neighborhood is really our lifeline because that's my tax base. We don't have a huge commercial base. We don't have a large industrial base. And so we want to make sure we protect that residential base. But is there a way for both to coexist? And I think that's part of your land use planning, being smart about where do you locate things like this that may be viewed as a negative impact. Part of what we're going through with our study is still looking at what are the real impacts on our community.
And I'll just add to Al's comments that or reinforce one and add a few other points, which is I really do think we've talked with communities across the country who have had some of this historic data center development, and that message of really understanding what your community needs, where are the areas that your community wants to invest in, what are those opportunities for growth, establish a strong foundation for being able to consider the trade-offs that a data center might pose. And so one, thinking about that as a first step that a community would take is being able to understand, how much residential do we want to be able to protect? Is it important for us to be able to, have an industrial park, and what kinds of entities would we want to go in there? Those are conversations that are deeply tied to this question of how you might think about a data center in your community. The second kind of point that has been hammered home to us by those who have had a lot of experience with this is also to know that many local jurisdictions are in a really good negotiating position. And so we've been told by local official after local official who have a lot of data centers to say, don't give away too much because it really matters for those things that Al was talking about. It matters for how you're thinking about the value that it's going to bring to your community and if that is the right decision for your community. When places are making this decision and trying to understand what are these energy and water impacts, there are a couple of things that we have kind of unpacked over the course of talking with other communities to this. On the kind of water demands need, as Al said, it really does matter about what kind of cooling technology a data center is using, right? So just imagine, we all have our, when our computers get all hot and they have to turn the fan on, and but imagine that times so many, servers going on. So data centers get really hot, and so what they have to do is be able to cool those down, and that is historically used water-based cooling systems. If those have had some ways that water has evaporated, those have used large quantities of water. But what we are seeing, and this is driven, I think, also in part by just kind of technology change and change within the industry to use cooling systems that, as Al mentioned, are closed loop or are using more air cooling systems. Now, the trade-off when you go further away from the kind of high-intensity water cooling systems is that they require more electricity. So you kind of have this trade-off. When you're using less water, you're going to use more electricity. Using less electricity, you're going to have cooling systems that are using more water. So there is a trade-off there. But you know what we've heard from places who are using these either fully air-cooled systems or closed-loop systems that their water consumption and their kind of wastewater ends up being roughly equivalent to kind of like a regular office building. And so some places really feel like, well, in that situation on the waterfront, I don't feel so vulnerable. Now that might increase your power needs substantially. And so then it brings to this question, well, what are the impacts on the power grid? And I tend to think about these in two buckets. I know I try to categorize things in buckets a lot because it helps me organize them in my head. But basically, what are the things that could happen on the system that might increase rates? And what are the things that might happen on the system that could decrease rates? And you can imagine data centers actually playing a role in both of those, but it depends on what they're doing and how it's structured. Data centers might increase rates if there's a lot of new infrastructure that has to be invested in the system to be able to serve that data center, and if that infrastructure investment is being distributed across users as opposed to only allocated to that data center. There's been a lot of efforts to try to say, data centers need to pay their fair share. They need to pay the amount that they need to pay for those infrastructure upgrades. And that is being done, at a state level often. States thinking about how are we going to establish rates that might be separate for data centers in a separate rate class, or make sure that there are specific stipulations within the contracts that a data center has to ensure that if this infrastructure is going to get built for them, they're going to use it. They're going to, have specific stipulations within their contract that say, well, if you don't use that, you have to find someone else to do it, or you have to pay a fee. And so there is both that idea of like, how do you make sure that the costs that are uniquely serving the data center are not being spread across? And then if they did not use as much power as was estimated and all this infrastructure was built, how do we make sure that that gap is not being put on the backs of, for example, residential customers? And so that is a lot of what's happening in utility commissions. So, for example, our Public Utilities Commission here in Minnesota has started a process for defining a large user rate class within the state. This is something that the legislature passed last year, and really trying to separate out the rates that are charged to residential versus these very large load users. Those are going to be that category of data centers that are those really large data center projects over 100 megawatts. So that's one way you might think about protecting new costs from coming onto, in particular, residential consumers. There's also ways that data centers could benefit the grid. And in particular, in rural communities, you might be served by a rural electric co-op, not by an investor-owned utility. They do things a little bit differently. Most rural electric co-ops that we've talked with, if they were interested in a data center, are going to be interested in those smaller scale data centers. It's a big deal to bring on a project the size of 100 megawatts to a rural electricity provider, in particular a co-op. But they might see some of those smaller data centers as having some real benefits to the grid. Let's imagine you are in a community and you have some agricultural processing that happens maybe once a year, and you have to use a lot of electricity for that. Well, the electricity provider has sized their system such that they can provide that power at that time. But it might mean that actually, like a lot of the year, they have a bunch of basically unused electricity. And a data center might build a stronger base load for them. It might say like, well, actually, we have some more electricity that can be paid for that we've already basically already sized for. And that could be a huge benefit to the utility and have an opportunity to either stabilize or potentially decrease rates. The other area that data centers could play an active role in, which is a little bit more uncertain because it's not necessarily something that data centers love to do all the time, is, in the summer when it's really hot and we all turn on our air conditioners, that's like the hardest time for our electric utilities to provide us power because everyone wants it at the same time and no one wants to shut it off. So for a long time, utilities have had what we call kind of demand response programs, which means that everyone's going to use it. Well, hey, you industry, like I know that you can actually turn it off or reduce at that time so that large amount that needs to be provided is actually a little bit less so that, people can use their air conditioning and I'm going to not do that industrial process for a little bit. To the extent that data centers are able to help the utility kind of modulate those big peaks, it can be beneficial for the system as well. So I know that was a really long answer to your question. It's because it's complicated and it's really hard. I think that people are looking for this perfect answer of what is this going to do in all situations? And the answer is it really depends on what's going on, but there are protections you can put in place. There are questions you can ask about how the utility, what are those structures going in place, what's in their contract. You might not always get the answers, but you can ask the questions.
And that makes me think of another question that has always popped into my mind occasionally thinking about data centers. Well, a couple of questions. One is, are these data centers proposing that they add anything to the electrical grid through renewable energy, whether solar panels or windmills or whatever? And do they have an impact on the larger energy grid? I think back to the polar vortex back in Texas, in Texas several years ago, when the power outages and the power plants that went down, that had a ripple effect all the way up into western Minnesota because of it being on this same large sector of the national grid. And do data centers impact anything on that scale, or is it anything that needs to be considered as we talk about, revamping our national grid?
Those are two great questions. So on the renewable side, there are certainly data centers that are putting some kind of on-site renewables, kind of on the same parcel of land with a data center. Now, usually I think of those as just offsetting some of the power needs that a data center might use, unless you are using either basically your own kind of power plant, essentially, is you see examples of natural gas power plants, or you do see some examples of nuclear or things like that. That scale could power a data center, but oftentimes, if you have something like on-site renewables, like solar or wind, you would just be providing a small portion of the consumption that you would be using. So not to say that that's not happening and that they're not there, but rarely would it be that that is providing the full amount of electricity that data center would be using. Most data centers are connected to the larger electricity grid. There are certainly cases, depending on who the company is that's operating or owning that data center, that are buying basically credits for renewable energy, given their own corporate goals for carbon offsets or things like that. So that is another case where that is happening. You won't necessarily see those. It's kind of a transaction that happens behind the scenes. You won't see those on the site, but they might still be happening behind the scenes. To the larger electricity grid question, one of the things that is pretty interesting is if you look at kind of the map of these large scale data centers in Minnesota, where are they being proposed? A lot of them do follow that backbone of the transmission system, Marnie, that you were talking about. And so they are really, that's kind of where we have our high voltage electricity. It's where you can add really, really large loads. And so you can kind of trace the map of the transmission system and see that it is certainly associated. It's definitely the first question that data center developers are asking, is there electricity for this? And if there's not, they're going to probably scope out some other places. And so that being said, it is tied to these broader conversations that are happening about our transmission system, but it's by no means the only thing that's a part of those conversations. So MISO that operates our regional transmission network that you were talking about earlier, they have had, long-term planning going on for the transmission system for a long time now. A lot of that has to do with other factors that are changing our electricity system, one being renewables, right? We need to be able to get renewables from the really good places where you can generate them, where there's lots of wind and where it's really sunny, to the places where there's a lot of electricity demand, so usually more urbanized areas. And we use our transmission system to do that. And then at the same time, we're seeing the electrification of all other. So many other kinds of things. You think about our electric vehicles, our electric heat pumps, things that are adding new electricity demand in other ways. So data centers are a part of that picture because they use such a large amount of electricity, but they're not the only thing that is influencing this discussion of how do we need to upgrade our transmission system. Certainly, we see examples elsewhere in the country where kind of like the confluence of an upgrade to your transmission system and some data center demand maybe is kind of speeding up that process or putting new pressures on it. But that those upgrades to the transmission system are doing other things for our electricity sector as well.
Yeah, the whole electrical system and
I
where
know.
they fit
If
into
you ever need me to
it
go
is.
back and say, can you say that again? Or more simply, you just let me know.
Okay. Well, let's move into something that might be more in Al's area, which is local government and non-disclosure agreements. So those have been a hot topic, including at the legislature. The question of non-disclosure agreements and whether elected officials should be signing them. Now, from what I understand, NDAs are not unusual when a developer, any kind of developer, comes to town. They would like to keep their project under wraps while they negotiate with the city's planning commission. So the city may enter into an NDA with the developer, but as soon as the developer applies for a building permit, all the plans become public information anyways. So it seems like there are two things here. At what point, what at what at the point where the developer applies for a building permit, has anything been set in stone with the city yet? In other words, has the city entered into any kind of a deal with the developer that can't be undone? And two, what is the thinking around city officials and elected officials, especially entering into NDAs, and where that maybe butts up against open meeting laws?
I'm not sure I completely understand the NDA argument. Generally, that's entered into so that you can have some conversations about project size, scoping, and not to drive the price of potential land acquisition up prematurely.
Okay.
I won't say never, but it's pretty rare to have an NDA for anything other than that land acquisition piece. The challenge I see with data centers is the developer coming in to build the data center might not have that end user in hand yet. They're just looking to build it and then market it, from some of the research that we've seen. So that makes it real challenging. Whether you have an NDA or not, what is there to share, right? We have a developer that wants to buy some land potentially for a data center. Well, who's going to be in this data center? Well, is it a Google? Is it fill in the blank? We don't always know. There are in some situations, trade secrets that have to be protected, and to not be able to enter into an NDA, that's probably going to kill a project if it's dealing with true trade secrets. But generally, that comes later in the process. So I'm a little torn on that. I understand the public concept. To answer your question, we can't enter into a development agreement without being in a public meeting. I mean, there are no deals cut outside of the public face because, we have to have things like public hearings. We have to tell the world why we're doing a development agreement. It may include subsidies. It might not include subsidies. A development agreement doesn't have to be just about business subsidies. So those are all done in a public meeting. The argument that you're making the decision in the public meeting or the public hearing is just a rubber stamp. It's kind of vilifying the local government because they can't make those decisions until they're in a public meeting. They can get information, they can understand some of the background, but they can't make decisions until they're in a public meeting. So, gosh, I understand the concern. I'm not sure that it warrants legislation, I guess from my experience. I have not dealt with the data center, and I'm really stretching to try and put myself in a spot where I'd have to understand why I need an NDA to help a developer secure land. If that's what they're doing, I'm not sure that I need to be signing an NDA to do that. So again, having not walked through it myself, on different development projects, we have been asked to sign NDAs and they had nothing to do with data centers. So to have a knee-jerk reaction, legislatively might be a little short-sighted.
Can you explain a little about open meeting laws? I think they're not always well understood.
Well, the open meeting law simply says that if you have a majority of your elected body discussing a decision, you have to post it, you have to announce it, you have to let the public know that you're having this consideration. It includes everything from having, a majority of your city council or county board meeting together in a room, or it can even be making a phone call from one to the next, right? And saying, well, I have two votes for and one against. How do you vote? Kind of a serial meeting. That is also a violation because, we're not allowed to go out and make those decisions outside of the public purview. And I can have conversation with all of my council one-on-one, so I have an understanding of kind of how they see the world individually, but I can't share each council person's perspective with any other council member. I can only use that for my own baseline. And so the open meeting law says no, if you're making a decision at any level, you have to have the public informed and aware that this is being discussed.
Okay.
And I admit that I oversimplify it. I know that if I go back to the state code, they've got a page and a half that tell me what I can and can't do. But it's about making decisions in front of the public and not behind their back. We need to tell them what we're doing and let them be a part of that process.
Yeah, I think the concern is that information is being shared amongst the officials that isn't being shared with the public, and that somehow the officials will have their mind made up and, like you said, just rubber stamp things as soon as it gets to the meeting. Does that ever actually happen, or is there discussion required in the meeting on these things?
I can't require elected officials to talk in a meeting. Sometimes I'd like to require them not to, but I'm joking. I think that the concept of making decisions before you get to a meeting, that's going to be up to the elected official. Are they doing their job as an elected official in conducting their due diligence? We always educate our council on things coming up ahead of time. We want them to be informed or be aware of as much as they can be before they walk into a council meeting, so they're prepared for what they're going to be facing. So, do they have information ahead of time on something of that scale? I would hope so. Part of that is the education process. But generally, if you have a development agreement, if there's some kind of a public hearing, you still have the opportunity for the citizens to be heard. Most city councils will have an opportunity for public input in their council meetings. And that's another opportunity. A good elected official is going to listen. They have to weigh and balance the what do I know and what am I hearing and how do I do what's best for the community? Because that's really their charge is to do what's best for our community.
Elise, you want to add anything to that?
Out of the expert of on kind of local government procedure here, but the only thing I would just say is, how I think a little bit about the NDA question is just in general the information asymmetries that exist that within kind of data center development, and that I think that that makes people nervous and upset because they feel like they might not know like what is the real impact, what are we dealing with. And one of the things that I'll say that I've learned from the jurisdictions we've talked to outside of Minnesota is that the local government officials don't always know that information either. And so actually, like when I think about the big information asymmetries that are going on within data centers, I tend to think about it between kind of like the developers and other folks. We've had lots of conversations with local governments about kind of, well, how much electricity use, for example, does this building set? And they will say, we don't know. The developer and the utility know that, but we don't actually know that. And so I think that there's a maybe a bigger conversation that's not just around kind of NDAs, but around kind of like what information do we have that's publicly available to be able to inform strong decisions that are following the kinds of process that Al talked about. And what gaps do we have, and maybe how could we advocate for filling in those broader information gaps? So that tends to be one of the ways that I think about it. And you can see examples of what local governments have tried to do throughout the country to try and, encourage more of that information sharing. But it's tough on multiple parties throughout the process.
So I guess, we've seen that this is a big, complex issue, and probably especially for rural communities that aren't necessarily used to dealing with big, complex issues. So what do residents in rural communities need to know to just, help them understand and maybe look at this as more from facts rather than emotions? We talked a little bit about, the information sharing and things like that, but what would your advice be to residents?
Well, I think first of all, part of our process that we're engaged in right now is understanding what are those things that we should be sharing with the public ahead of time. If my job is to represent the public, I should be giving them the information, not just the council, but it should go to the community and say, hey, this is what a data center is. This is what we think you can expect. This is, our vision of how this impacts us. And again, share the facts, educate the community, not just the city council. In Ohio right now, there is a, I'm sorry, not Ohio, in Oklahoma right now, there's a recall of the entire city council over a data center. They voted to approve a data center, and the public came out and petitioned for a total recall of the entire elected body. I got to ask, what got missed? Because the council represents the entire city. We should know that ahead of time, but we should have facts and not the emotional arguments again that we talked about. It's they make a lot of noise. Well, what is the noise? How much noise? What Is it constant? Is it intermittent? What is the water usage? What is the impact of the electric utilization? Let's have those facts so we can tell the public this is what we're seeing. This is what our target is. Maybe it's not a hyperscale data center because it doesn't fit my community's culture or aesthetics or land availability, whatever that is. But let's do a better job of educating the public ahead of time. And quite honestly, if they don't like the idea, we can expand the tax base as much as we want. But if it's not something that the public is interested in, we're kind of fighting the wrong fight.
Okay, Elise.
Yeah, the only things I would echo is that, from a lot of the conversations we've had with different places, knowing the specifics of what's being discussed in this particular site, in this particular project, are really important. I think one of the things we've heard from other places is that each project can be really different. And so those questions that Al raised, often the things that communities are going to be most immediately interested in talking about are, how noisy is this going to be? And what is it going to look like? And really, the aesthetics discussion has been like, how do we move data centers from looking like giant warehouses to how do we make them look more like giant office buildings? How do we have plantings? How do we have them not just look, what people have described to us is just pretty ugly. And then, how do you really mitigate the noise? And noise is coming typically from two sources. One can be from the cooling system itself, and the other is from the backup generators that are on site, in case the power does go out. Those generators are there not only what will turn on not only when there's a power outage, but they do have to be tested regularly. And so, those tend to be the source of the noise, and so really understanding, well, what is that timing? Is that when I'm going to be home, or is it going to when I'm going to be at work? So I think asking the questions about the issues that you care about are going to be the most important things. In the context of all of the things that we talked about, that it also it really matters. Like, what is that cooling system? What does that look like? How is the data center going to be served? What does the electricity utility think the impact might be? And to the extent that you can rely on resources coming out that feel like they're from a trusted source, and that's certainly one of the things we're trying to do with our project is to figure out how to provide that for places within Minnesota.
Okay. So is there some way that people can follow along with your project that you're working on? Is it a roundtable or a task force or just
Neither.
discussion? Okay.
We do have a QR code that Marnie, I can send you if you want to put it with the podcast, but it will put a allow people to sign up for kind of our updates as we go forward. If you are in the kind of southeast part of the state, we're going to have one more large convening in June on the topic. But then largely what we're putting out is a set of resources, and we're excited to share those resources widely when they are ready, hopefully mid-summer sometime.
Okay, and can the QR code get people to that too then at that time?
They would get it to an email list that would get them that eventually.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, well, thank you so much, Elise Harrington and Al Roeder, talking about data centers today. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
You've been listening to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.